Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of April, recording at, oh my goodness, it's 11:19 p.m. British Standard Time. Now, Friday's audio is the big picture audio, but first I'm just going to run very quickly through the surge in non-farm payrolls today. What that means basically is that there were far more jobs created than people had or analysts had been expecting, and although the chatter prior to this was certainly that the non-farm payrolls would be up, so it wasn't a total surprise, and you would have seen references to that in the GAFCAL report that I posted yesterday on the site. And nevertheless, this has caused quite a convulsive, dramatic day here in the markets today. Now, basically, what this means is more jobs being created. That's good news for the Bush administration, and therefore that's good news for the stock market. Now, I'm not making a political statement in saying that. It's history. Over the last century, the stock market has liked it when the incumbent president running for re-election, or the incumbent party running for re-election, has been ahead in the opinion polls. Now, and that's particularly true when that incumbent has been a Republican president, producing an average gain of over 14%. On the other hand, if the incumbent looks like losing, that gain drops down to, can't quite remember the statistics, but I posted them twice on this website before. They're in the archives, but I think it's down around 3%, something like that. So it's pretty hefty difference. So we had a surging U.S. stock market in here today. We had the biggest move, though, we had in bond markets, which plunged, and because really the prospect of a U.S. economy showing improved growth, that would take the pressure off the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates low. If interest rates were to go up, that's not going to be so good for the bond market, obviously, and also it's going to firm the dollar a bit, and we saw that today, and that is going to take some of the steam out of metals, as we also saw today. So let's back off from this now and say, where are we in the cycles? Well, first, we've got a good, clear rally going on in stock markets, and I'm relieved to say we've kind of been able to track that all the way from the day that fortuitously, the NASDAQ last week gave us that terrific upward dynamic, and that really did ring a bell against that oversold background, as you will recall. And everything that has occurred subsequently has been very much in line with the stock market rally continuing. And it's going to take a number of these indices to new highs. It might even take them all to new highs, although my hunch is that that high that we saw a couple of months ago was really the, and earlier for some indices, was the penultimate high for the rally. And you also know my view that we're late in the cycle here, and that the cycle tends to, is most likely going to peter out this year. There's some people saying that it could go on in through the first quarter of 2005. I doubt it. There are also some people who say, no problem, that if the cycle's going to go on running, in other words, stock markets are going to keep moving up right on into 2005 and 2006. Well, everything's possible in theory, but that really would go against the odds, or go against the trend of history. Related to the U.S. election cycle. Now, there are very, very good reasons for that trend, because what happens is in the first 2 years of the U.S. presidential election cycle, whoever's occupying the White House, whichever party, what they're trying to do is to create the excesses, or beg your pardon, they're trying to correct the excesses created by the previous administration in its lost 2 years during which it was trying to gain re-election. Now, therefore, historically, the two most bearish years, overwhelmingly so, are the 2 years after the U.S. presidential election cycle, in other words, the first 2 years of the new term. And then, not surprisingly, the most bullish period is the last 2 years of the presidential election cycle, when the incumbent president is trying to create the feel-good factor and get the economy going as much as possible prior to the next election. And because of Wall Street's dominant influence for so long, most indices, and certainly all those of Europe, are going to slavishly follow that U.S. trend. Now, the big question is, will Japan, will Asia, will it uncouple? Will some of the commodity markets, such as Russia, will they uncouple? Well, yes, that's possible, and some sometimes do, but they're really on a bit of a tether. If Wall Street starts to deteriorate, that tether or leash is going to prevent them from really running riot, that's for sure. And the odds become worse. And also, if you get a major sell-off on Wall Street, and I think there's a high risk that we may well see that in 2005 and 2006, in line with the secular bear market theme and the ending of a good, very good and predictable medium-term technical bull within that long-term secular downtrend, that when Wall Street tips down sharply, obviously it does tend to undermine confidence in a number of the other markets. After all, they're very dependent on the U.S. economy for part of their growth, although, again, Asia's asset play and also Asia's consumer recovery story, all those can help to mitigate that somewhat, but not offset it entirely. And additionally, if Wall Street sells off strongly, as we know, that's always taken Europe with it. And with those two markets declining, then you are going to get a lot of international money managers based in Europe and the United States repatriating capital, if only because their clients wish them to do so, and start cutting back on equity investments. So, again, where Wall Street goes is going to have a big influence, obviously, on what happens to other markets, albeit a bit less so in Asia and the some of the commodity-producing markets in this cycle. But let's not worry about 2005 and 2006 right now. Let's enjoy the technical rally that's occurring here right now, which I say is likely to take, to at least test the highs on most of these indices. And I'm playing that mainly through Asia, as you know, and also within the commodity sector. Okay, moving on to bond markets. Now, I've been saying for quite a while that this bond market is an accident waiting to happen. And I'm talking about the government long-dated bonds, of course, now. And I've said that we had the peak in government bond prices, the low in yields, in other words, in June of last year. And at that point, we had bonds plummet, and they reached certainly more than we had seen for a number of years. And they reached lows in September, and then had been bond prices had been edging upwards in what to me has been a lengthy right-hand extension phase to the overall top formation. And then that was starting to unravel a bit. As you know, we were getting the first signs of deterioration. It started with those JGBs, when they took the Japanese government bonds, when they took several hits on the downside. And then the U.S. Treasury bonds, which performed better, but they started to weaken. Well, this non-farm payrolls nailed bond markets in here today. You had the U.S. long bond. I'm looking at futures now, but it closed down over 2.5 points. It had been lower. It had spiked another 2.25 points lower, so it did bounce off that low, but this is still a big downside day. It's a headline-making day. And gilts and euro bunds, the futures there had big downside days in here. So those are dynamics on the charts. They are going to look a bit alarming. And I think they represent at least part of a psychological step across the Rubicon here for bond market investors. Now, you know, this bond market has been well, providing yields that are historically extremely low. And you know that a number of people, myself included, have been saying that this is not attractive. Governments are issuing more and more paper. The yields just are not all that good. Commodity prices are pushing upwards. We have asset inflation, and we're starting to get inflation just about everywhere but wages. And the official statistics that are produced by governments, I think anybody who has to pay the household bills, excuse me, or do any shopping, knows that a lot of the books are cooked. Or in other words, the figures are massaged. So that inflation pressure is building up. And why was this bond market so steady? Well, you know the reason, because the Japanese were piling into US bonds to keep their currency down. In other words, recycling their dollars back into the US. The Chinese were doing exactly the same thing. And the most volatile component here by far, though, has been the carry trade, the so-called carry trade by the big financial institutions, particularly the US big financial institutions. And that means that quite simply, they could go out and borrow money from the US Federal Reserve at a 1% interest rate and go in and place it at the bond market, getting 3-4% or more, depending on which maturity they actually used. And they could do that on a leveraged basis, and it was money for old rope as long as the bond prices were edging higher and the Fed was reassuring everybody that interest rates would not go up. Well, of course, the non-farm payrolls jump has now frightened the market, because Greenspan had been talking about payrolls and keeping interest rates low enough to ensure that payrolls did improve. Now, the payrolls data was a bit of a well, it's first it's the statistic of the d statistic du jour, and it's a bit of an anomaly, because what had been going on? There'd been the bad weather in February, and then there'd been a strike of I think a number of workers in the was it the supermarket industry or farm-related industries? Can't remember. But so allowing for those factors, the bulge could possibly be a one-off. And I certainly Greenspan isn't going to rush out and raise interest rates following one statistic. Therefore, you may see these bond prices edge upwards again a little bit next week. But again, I maintain that this is a top extension activity, and that we have seen probably the high in the rally beneath the previous tops within these bond markets. So I'm happy to maintain my short positions here. They're not large short positions, but for the first time, really, since I started this exercise a number of months ago, I wanted to have a stake here, because I wanted to be able to keep my eye on these bonds. And if you've got a stake there, then it does concentrate the mind a little bit. Otherwise, I might forget about it for 6 months, although hopefully not. And keeps me focused on this. But for the first time since I've had that exercise going, I'm in the money now on both of these positions, and I'm content to stay with these. I'm not going to trade them out in hopes that I can get back in again slightly higher. I may use a baby steps jobbing operation before too much longer, but not at the moment. So again, bond markets vulnerable and will become increasingly vulnerable with time. Remember, we had an 18-year secular bull market, and now we're getting the topping out process. And the only script that I can envisage that would alter that would be if the US slides into a severe recession and depression. Now, maybe that's down the road somewhere, and hopefully not. Well, there'll certainly be more recessions down the road. But right now, this is not an immediate threat by any means. Okay, moving on, in terms of the currencies, we had the US dollar rally today, again on that news, as I mentioned earlier, and that pushed the euro down 2.29, so back to 121.36. So just where it had been edging up for a few days, and people were beginning to say, right, the dollar's sort of been a little bit had it in here, and the euro's fallen back once again. And this is still a ranging market overall. We do not have conclusive evidence that the euro has hit its low, obviously not after today's action, which is a dynamic within the trading range, but there is a fair amount of support down in that sort of 120 region. If we get a more powerful dollar rally, the main reason is also cited, well, it's been cited on my site and in that GAFCAL report, where they talk about the dollar carry. In other words, all the people who shorted the dollar or borrowed US dollars to play the asset reflation game from commodities to property all around the world. So it's going to be a tricky time here, and I have two currency trades, and I am chagrined to say that I'm losing money on both of them at the moment. The euro-yen, where I'm long the euro against the Japanese yen that I opened up, what was it, I think it was last week, that wasn't looking too bad yesterday. It's closing in on a break-even position, but it's fallen back here today to 126.80, so that's worse off. But the dollar-yen, where I chanced my hand near that 105 level and picked up the dollar against the Japanese yen, that's improved. That's at 104.50, so quite a small loss there. But as I say, they're both both underwater, and that tells me as much as anything that this is still a tricky environment in here, and I don't want to. I was attempting to buy low after a sell-off, and I did buy low, but they've moved lower. So tricky environment here in currencies still. My long-term hunch, though, in this is that we probably haven't seen the end of the dollar's decline, but we have certainly seen most of it for the next couple of years. That would be my hunch. And remember, no central bank in the world today wants a strong currency. Only some are willing to do more about it than others to prevent their currency from strengthening. And that will be a movable feast. That means good news for the precious metals, but not on every single day, of course, and not on a day when the dollar is getting a pretty good rally. So that reversed gold's small gains that we had in the morning and more. Gold got up to a high of 429.35 and then closed at 420.65, down 5.25. Now that's really only $10-$11 off the recent recovery high, which is the high for the last many years. And the gold outlook in my mind is exceptionally bullish, but this is still the early stages of this long-term cyclical secular bull market. So every time gold falls and gets one of the bigger shakeouts, say $30, $40, $50, that's very much an opportunity to accumulate. And if you're still building positions, really any setback is an opportunity to buy a little bit more gold, which is gradually uncoupling from this dollar influence. Or to put it this way, the dollar is a much less of an influence on it than it was previously, when people thought that it was entirely a US dollar story. Now, palladium, you've seen the website on this and the breakthrough discovery of ways to use or to create adapt catalytic converters so that palladium can be used in the diesel engine exhaust systems. It's good news for the for demand for palladium. And of course, it was signaled by the firm price action, although I certainly didn't have a clue as to what was behind that. But the supply-demand picture certainly indicated that demand was ascendant. Now, palladium surged ahead here earlier today, got up to $318 on top of yesterday's big gains. Then it gave back most of that, but it still closed up 475. That's a new closing high for palladium at 305.95 on the June position, and that was the best performing metal of all in here today. Now, palladium was, of course, the bargain basement opportunity with the big base formation, which had to attract some interest from the commodity funds, and also if the metal is very depressed. I wrote a lot about this today, but I didn't have time to put in this comment. If the metal is extremely depressed, well, that's going to cause people to consider additional uses for it. And conversely, if the platinum price is extremely high, as it certainly has been for quite some time, that's going to cause the people who are dependent on platinum to say, well, how can we use less platinum, or can we find substitutes? And of course, that brings us right back to palladium. But I think this breakthrough in terms of the automobile catalytic converters is a significant fundamental change, and that may well lead to a major overall long-term re-rating of the palladium market. And if that's the case, then it has a lot further to go. Well, I think that's likely in any event, but it has even further to go than I would have thought previously. What do I mean by that? Well, this thing could easily double, triple, quadruple over the next few years. I'm looking for this long-term big cyclical move upwards in commodities. And remember, my primary investment and trading theme for this year, supply inelasticity. And no doubt it won't be just this year that I'll be focusing on supply inelasticity. Now, I've been telling you that I wanted to get back into some of those base metals, and I'm glad I didn't do it yesterday, and I didn't do it in here today. I was very tempted to come in and buy the copper, but I wanted to wait and see what happened with the non-farm payrolls, and then they came out, and copper was relatively steady against that background, and I thought, maybe I should go in, but no, give it a while longer. And well, at any rate, copper in the U.S. closed down 240 to $2.40. That's not a big decline. Brings it back to 134.70. It's still in the upper middle part of its trading range. But I may well watch this for a couple of days next week and buy it if it eases a little bit, or I'd have to go after it if it saw an upward dynamic out of this trading range. But I do want to pick up more metals in here. But I just watched that dollar and the action in here today. Hopefully, I'll be able to time it a little bit better. Now, rounding out here, though, but again, to emphasize on this, we have this major, major bullish environment for commodities. Now, is this going to affect them all? Well, I think it's pretty good news for so-called black gold oil, although my purchase, remember I've got a July gasoline position, small position there, I beg your pardon, it's not gasoline, it's the July crude oil. I've got a long position there. I should have had the gasoline, that's done better. But I'm a little underwater in this crude position, not significantly, but I think I hadn't really thought it through. I mean, is the medium and longer term outlook for oil prices bullish? Yes, I think without a question, given the surging demand coming from China, India, and other developing economies, and demand is still going up in the West, and the supplies are finite. So that's a pretty obvious situation, but in the short to medium term, I hadn't thought it through entirely because this has become very much an election issue in the U.S. economy. And what we are seeing now is Bush taking measures to try to get the oil prices down, such as releasing some of the pollution control strictures for oil. I saw a headline briefly on that in here today. And he'll certainly try to jawbone it down. And that will happen with some effect. So I'll be lucky not to get out of this July oil long position that I have. I'll be lucky if I escape from that without a bit of a loss. But I'm holding on to it for the moment here. Last but not least in the commodity sector, those soybeans had terrific action in here. Yesterday, as you know, we had that upward dynamic and we had some follow-through here today. It was ranging around during the day, mostly on the upside, and then closed just half a cent off the high, up 16 at 10 45 and a half. I toyed with picking up a little more soybeans earlier today, but then again, the non-farm payrolls and the dollar rallying in here and a bit of nervousness in some of these markets. I thought I'd hold off. It paid to hold off in the copper. It didn't pay to hold off in the soybeans. As you know, they just closed quite near the high. And that's pretty much it. So I'll just say that I'm going to be doing some work in here over the weekend. So I will be doing a subscribers' emails and questions audio. I may do a little bit more than that as well. And otherwise, just have a fabulous weekend.